next presenter is me. But I do want to note for both this presentation and the other one that I'm going to do that, in fact, I'm presenting data from former students or current students. So if I tend to stumble a little bit, it's because I hadn't planned on being the presenter, just the moderator. So this talk, and it fits very nicely, is looking at the relationship between victimization and depression in persons with SMI. Let me mention my co-authors, Brian Perrin, who's on the faculty at the University of Michigan, Ben Alexander Eitzman, who's a doctoral student at Washington University, and David Gillespie, who's on the faculty there. As is very well established in the literature, homeless persons are victims of violent and nonviolent crime at much, much higher rates than house populations. And that even in very simple definitions, these rates, even conservatively estimated as here, are quite significant. One of the things that we look at that's important about looking at victimization is the impact of victimization on the person's experiencing it itself. And research on house populations suggests that, in particular, there are factors that buffer the consequences of victimization. So what we wanted to do was look at one particular buffer that's been demonstrated to be pretty robust as a mediator of psychological impact on homeless populations. In particular, when we look at perceived safety, what we find is that people who see themselves as left safe, who are victimized, tend to become more depressed or report more depressive symptoms, as Grieger and colleagues found in 2003. And given the importance and the prevalence of victimization, the fact that we've not really looked at this as a potential impact in homeless populations. So, the questions are exactly as we've laid out. In particular, what is the influence of victimization? And perception of safety as a mediator. And the other thing that we want to look at is how that proceeds over time. Because one of the issues that has come up, in particular with the research on disaster and trauma, is that there are great differences based on when you measure over time the impact of the negative event on functioning. That is, there's a regression to the mean in disaster research that says that people who report trauma early on, a vast majority of them, intervention or not, are not traumatized long term. So, I don't have to explain this study, thank you. We used access data. We used baseline and one-year follow-up for our modeling. And here's the hypothesized relationships. What we basically hypothesize is that perceived safety will act, higher perceived safety will be associated with lower depression where people have physical victimization. That's the buffering. But that the presence of some victimization is associated with higher depressive scores. So that's a very simple explanation of a fairly, I don't know if it's complex or not, but it's a picture of that. We also wanted to look longitudinally, given what I just presented. And the idea is that over time, we expect we hypothesize that these would in fact continue. That is, that perceived safety would be, I think we have the figure wrong there. Perceived safety at time two would be associated with depressed mood, less depressed mood. I'm sorry, that's an error that I hadn't caught. We decided to break victimization up into non-physical and physical, in part because our feeling from some of the looking at rates of physical and non-physical among the homeless was that these were very different things in terms of likelihood. And so we picked five things that were reported for non-physical, as you can see, theft and threats, and for physical, robbery by force, robbery associated with some sort of physical consequences, assault without robbery, and sexual assault, including rape. I want to make an important point here. When we're talking about depression, we're not talking about diagnosis. We're talking about mood. So what we have are items from the DIS within the 30. It's a 30-day variable, and what we looked at was number of symptoms reported. Similarly, perceived safety was also a scale with 5 items from Lehman's quality of life. So we're not talking about depressive illness. We're talking about depressed mood. So we want to be very careful, because as folks, as I assume most of you are aware, there's a huge difference between psychiatric depression and depressed mood. We wanted to be very careful not to confuse the two in the analysis. We used structural equation modeling. What we did was we looked at the measurement model, then we tested the baseline hypothesis, then we tested a lagged model. That is, entering the baseline data first and then the lag data afterwards. And then we looked at subsamples. One of the advantages of having a very large data set is you can run multiple SEMs, and that was one of the primary reasons for Access. With over 5,000 complete baseline and 12-month interviews, we were able to look at gender, race, etc. So we were able to see how the hypotheses differed for various sub-analyses. I will ask you very nicely at this point, when we get to questions, not to ask me about the minutiae of SEM. I can tell for those of you who are statistical geeks, the models were fairly robust and the predictions were fairly strong. So that what that means, I can tell you that the significances were in the correct directions. So the models were good models, but I can't tell you the numbers, and I'm very thankful I only have 15 minutes, so I don't have to report it. So here are the results. In terms of the baseline model, what we found was that perceived safety mediated depressed mood. That is, the higher your perceived safety score at baseline, if you reported a victimization, the lower your depressed mood. And that all the other paths were non-significant. So it's only for physical victimization, not for the non-physical. In terms of subgroup analyses, basically, we didn't find much. The models held very consistently across gender, presence of psychiatric diagnosis, presence of... what else did we do? Gender, psychiatric diagnosis, addiction diagnosis, and I believe we also did a split age. And basically, oh, there it is. I should read my slides. And also length of time homeless. So that basically the model was very stable for all the sub-analyses. There were not any differences in paths, some minor differences in coefficients. So looking over time, what we found was that the first three, again, non-physical victimization was not significant in any analyses. But what you see, when you look at physical victimization and perceived safety and depressed mood, that's the first part at time one. Then at time two, perceived safety at time one was associated with increased perceived safety, but was also associated with increased depressed mood. So that is, the mood goes down based on perceived safety, but over time, even though the perceived safety goes up, the depressed mood goes back up. Is that clear? That's kind of important so we'll talk about why I think this is. But it's in the opposite of the hypothesized direction, so we need to be very clear on that. So basically, the story is we think that when you take this model, that's a fairly robust model in populations that are not homeless, what we believe happens is that, and I'll use a very technical term here, being homeless sucks and is stressful and is difficult along a whole number of dimensions, and that the background noise of being in a stressful situation tends to be associated with increased depressed mood. And so this is a population, some of whom are housed, which we didn't put in. But most of whom remain homeless, so that the depression, the victimization itself, even a robustly horrifying thing like physical victimization, perceived safety has an immediate buffering, But against the day-to-day issues of living with homelessness, it's not as powerful because there are all the indignities of being homeless. And similarly, our feeling is that non-physical victimization is simply not, it's not so out of the norm of the difficulties in being homeless that this finding continues. So, one of the things that we couldn't measure for that we were we wish we had the data is we don't know whether they were re-victimized. So it may be the case that in the intervening 12 months a number of negative events have happened that are not from a psychiatric perspective but from a clinical perspective depressing. Or it may be, as I said before, and I think this is the robust part of the story, homelessness sucks. Or being homeless sucks, I guess, if we're going to be from the perspective of the clinician. The other thing is that in doing a very simple model, even though it's a fairly robust model in populations without, the idea of the impact of the extreme likelihood of polymorbidities, both psychiatric substance abuse and economic, and housing support, housing status, are impacting on the predictive ability of the model. The other piece that we're not able to analyze but we think is potentially important is some of the literature that talks about social support. And we wonder whether that is potentially a more robust mediator or buffer, but we couldn't analyze it. Again, I mentioned the depressed mood versus depression. The fact that we chose simple models rather than multiple and did sub-analyses rather than including these, we don't know how the impactfulness of victimization, one of the studies that we think ought to be done, and if people have any idea of how to do it, I'd be interested, is to look at the perceived severity of victimization in homeless versus non-homeless populations. It would tell us a lot about the explanation. And I do want to mention something that wasn't mentioned, is that the ACCESS study is still a treatment sample. It's not a population sample. We know that it's people who are not in treatment and who are... So it's not... We don't know if this is for all of homeless. We know this is for 9 states and 18 cities. And obviously where we want to go with this, since we have a great deal of power, is more complex models. That's it. Thank you very much.